The following podcast is a presentation of the Washington College of Law at American University. Any unauthorized use or distribution is strictly prohibited.
Please be seated. This honorable court is now in session. The Honorable Terry Phelps presiding.
Injury suit brought by a young man who accepted an invitation to dance with the team mascot on the roof of the dugout at a Sky Sox game, and unfortunately fell 6 feet onto the grass of the playing field. The Sky Sox have brought this motion pursuant to the Colorado Baseball Spectator Safety Act of 1993. The facts for purposes of this motion are simple and not contested. On May 28, 2009, Mr. Mason attended a Colorado Sky Sox baseball game, as he had done numerous times before. Mr. Mason was invited to dance on the roof of the Sky Sox dugout with the Sky Sox mascot, Sox the Fox, between the fifth and sixth innings. Mr. Mason happily accepted because he had seen a number of fans dance with Sox on the dugout roof, and he thought it looked like fun. Mr. Mason could see that there was no railing around the roof of the dugout. When he arrived at the dugout, Mr. Mason exchanged a handshake and a hug with Sox, and then they danced together. Towards the end of the song, Sox did bump hips with Mr. Mason, causing Mr. Mason to lose his balance, fall, and suffer injuries. In 1993, Major League Baseball came to Colorado. And in 1993, the Colorado legislature enacted the Colorado Baseball Spectator Safety Act of 1993. In enacting the act, the legislature set forth its findings. And they include these. The General Assembly recognizes that persons who attend professional baseball games may incur injuries as a result of the risks involved in being a spectator at such baseball games. However, the General Assembly also finds that attendance at such professional baseball games provides a wholesome and healthy family activity, which should be encouraged. The General Assembly further finds that the state will derive economic benefit from spectators attending professional baseball games. It is, therefore, the intent of the General Assembly to encourage attendance at professional baseball games. Not that is in the record or available to us, Your Honor. The legislature,
in your opinion,
I think it contemplated that, Well, it set forth in a way what it contemplated. It said these risks include but are not limited to injuries which result from being struck by a baseball or a baseball bat. So if it was a baseball or a baseball bat, it would clearly be included. But other things are also clearly included. The statute declares that...
Things are also clearly...
Absolutely. I don't know what they are. We might disagree as to what they are, but it is apparent that the legislature contemplated that things in addition to balls and bats would be inherent risks. Where the legislature said these risks include but are not limited to. So that means that there would be more than just the balls and the bats. The legislature was speaking to spectators and assuming the inherent risks of attending a professional baseball game. And that is includes things that would be involved in being in the stands or attending the game. I think it's fair to say that one of the risks would be having beer spilt on you. When you put tainted on it, then I don't think that would be an inherent risk. On the other hand, I do think that being exposed to peanuts and peanut dust would be an inherent risk. It's part of going to the game. It's part of the whole experience, and that's what the legislature was speaking to. The legislature said that it thought it was important to limit civil liability of people who own baseball teams and those who own stadiums to help contain costs and keep ticket prices affordable. And I don't think it's an accident that this statute was passed the same year that the Colorado Rockies came to Denver. It's part of an overall attempt by the legislature to encourage attendance and participation of professional baseball, which is different than non-professional baseball, which would not be covered by the statute.
The thing that troubles me with your
I think if you had a defective product, such as a bad hot dog, I think that would be a place, one of the lines to draw. Joking on a good hot dog would probably be part of attending a game. I mean, the whole point was to take tort concerns out of the equation so that the new Major League team and its necessary subsidiaries, which the Sky Sox are one, they're a farm team for the Rockies, would be able to go into business successfully. The risks that are, to deal with the risk, the legislature set forth a particular kind of immunity. It said that spectators of professional baseball games are presumed to have knowledge and to assume the inherent risks of observing professional baseball games. It then said that there would be these exceptions, and then listed those. But absent the exceptions, this inherent risk that people are presumed to have assumed would be a complete bar to suit and a complete defense. So if this is an inherent risk, and in this situation there's no debate about whether or not this was a spectator, this is a professional baseball team, there was an owner, those kinds of things. So if it is an inherent risk, then the statute would on its face apply. There are three exceptions. Yes, ma'am. Oh, I think it's the statute goes beyond that. I think it says during pregame activities. And if it, Yes, Your Honor. In Section 3B, professional baseball games shall also include pregame activities and shall include any baseball game or pregame activity regardless of the time of day when the game is played. So it certainly goes beyond just the game itself. The exceptions are, first, that if the owner or operator fails to make a reasonable and prudent effort to design, alter, and maintain the premises of the stadium in a reasonably safe condition relative to the nature of the game of baseball. The other two, I don't think, are at all in dispute. Intentionally injures a spectator or fails to maintain, post and maintain the required warning signs. And there was a maybe it would be better if, and I'm happy to answer your question. I'd like to answer your first question first, because I haven't really gotten to my argument about why this is an inherent risk. Is that 5 minutes left? Wow. First, experience dealing, attending a baseball game includes in getting involved with mascots. You're more likely to touch a mascot than you are to touch a foul ball. That's just the way it is. Mascots are there to be available. Kids are more interested in mascots than they are in the game. Harding includes a pretty good summary. The team mascots... I think anybody that go... I've been to 40 Major League Baseball games in my life and never gotten close to a foul ball. I can get close to a mascot and probably touch it if I want to. In Harding, the court explained that team mascots and their annex are a common phenomenon, and the mascots are normally present during the entire course of the game, and in many cases, they're more popular than the team itself. The mascots are part of the show. In Harding, we didn't have some mascot that was minor league that caused the problem. We had the chicken, a major league mascot who was out touring. Why? Because people want to see him. And that's a big part of the show. Given the prevalence of costume, again, this is from Harding, at baseball games, it is perfectly reasonable for a spectator to expect to observe these mascots in the normal course of the game. And in Lowe, the court, although ruling against the defendants, noted that mascots are needed to make money, and they are an important marketing tool. Well, it's different, but it's all part of the whole cloth. If it's part of the baseball experience, which is really what's being sold, especially in minor leagues, where part of the fun is to let the kids go run the bases, there's a whole lot going on that is not just watching the game. And to say, well, these things are set out, these aren't, really alters the purpose of the statute. The statute was intended to protect across the board.
Okay.
Well, if it's an inherent risk, they wouldn't need to. But I think it's fair to say that the plaintiffs are arguing that this is a failure to design. And it's absolutely clear that the statute limits this obligation to risks that are relative to the nature of the game of baseball. The Sky Sox has no railings on the top of dugout roofs, but that's to keep it safe relative to the nature of the game of baseball. If there were railings, there would be significant chances that struck foul balls would go at the railing and then deflect or ricochet. And while it's for the people sitting in the stands to see a ball coming, they can duck. But if it ticks the edge of that rail, like a hockey puck does in hockey, it can go at all sorts of odd angles. Moreover,
a railing would make
I think it would make it much more dangerous for the people in the stands. It would also make it much, much more dangerous for the players in the dugout and on the field, because the ball, they would see the ball coming and duck and then not fairly anticipate that it could hit something like a railing and bounce back down. We've all seen hockey pucks hit both posts and bounce out. Yes.
A TV camera.
Yes.
At a recent baseball game. There's lots of things that protrude that don't really increase the danger.
But
no one would argue that TV camera did anything besides the other camera.
Yes, Your Honor, but those are much further away. And they may, a 300 feet as opposed to a line drive pulled to the third base dugout. It's much more reaction time. And the fans there. Also, the pace of the ball is likely to be much more slow than it is quicker off the bat into the dugout area. So the allegation that this is a negligently designed aspect of the park is simply mistaken. If this was good design, then we'd see railings on all the dugouts in professional baseball, and they don't have railings on top of dugouts. And the reason is because of the safety. So with that, Your Honor, I'd like to reserve the rest of my time.
Good evening, Your Honor. May it please the court. I am Molly McBurney, and I present the plaintiff, Terry Mason. I would request that you deny the motion to dismiss that the Sky Sox have filed. Ms. Mason was injured when she was hip-bumped off the top of a six-foot-high dugout and onto the grass below. The Colorado Baseball Spectator Safety Act does not bar suit for injuries for these injuries for two reasons. First, Ms. Mason's injuries did not result from the risks that are inherent to the spectating of baseball. And second, even if they did result from risks that was inherent to spectating baseball, the stadium failed to maintain the dugout area in a manner that was reasonably safe condition relative to the nature of the game of baseball. In order for a risk to be inherent to the game, it must be integral to that activity. Those risks that are integral to an activity are those that are inevitable or unavoidable in the actual playing of the game, or in this case, in the actual spectating of the game.
Where are you getting that?
That's from the case Lowe v. California League of Baseball. And in that case, it's from California, Your Honor. Well, Colorado courts have never interpreted this act before, and so we don't actually have a Colorado definition for inherent risk. And thus, we need to go outside to other jurisdictions to see what analogous rulings have been. Yes, the Colorado Ski Safety Act also has a clause that's very similar to the Baseball Spectator Safety Act, in that it requires it's risks that are inherent to the sport of skiing. And they also engage in a similar definition and say that it is inherent dangers and risk of skiing mean those dangers or conditions which are an integral part of the sport of skiing. And in that case, they also concluded that the risk was not integral or inherent if the sport could be conducted without encountering that risk. And that comes from the Gravin case, where the risk of injury was the injury resulted from falling down a ravine adjacent to the ski slope, and the court found that that was not, as a matter of law, inherent, whereas the jury may conclude as a matter of fact that it was. And that is in contrast to the Gifford case, where the court found that a ravine that was crossed the ski slope and that you could not ski down the slope without encountering it was an inherent risk of skiing. And similar to those cases, it's true. You can go to every baseball game you go to, you're going to see a mascot. But not every spectator at a baseball game is going to be taken up to a dugout and be requested to dance with that mascot on top of this dugout. I would posit that very few spectators, in fact, actually get to dance on top of the dugout with the mascot. And
she wasn't forced to do this,
No, she wasn't forced to do it. She was excited to do it. She had been looking forward to the opportunity. It is still, however, an activity that is not inherent to the spectating of a baseball game, because one can spectate baseball without encountering this risk.
But the whole balls and bats thing, the
There is likely an occasion where she would assume that risk. If she had tripped and fallen on her own off the side of the dugout, then she may have assumed that risk because she was aware that there were no guard railings on the dugout. However, she didn't cause her own injury. She was hip bumped unexpectedly by the mascot. And the mascot had never, to her knowledge, engaged in such behavior with another spectator previous to that, so she couldn't have expected that to happen. Of all the Colorado Springs Sky Sox games that she had attended, this was the first time she'd ever seen this happen, yes. I believe this is the first time she'd ever seen anyone hip bumped by the mascot. She said that he was a gentle trickster, liked to hug people and things like that, but I don't believe she'd ever seen anyone actually contacted by the mascot during the dance on top of the dugout. Your Honor, I think that would still be covered by that still would fall outside the scope of the statute because it's the fact that she was interacting with the mascot that is the risk that is not inherent to spectating a baseball game and the location in which she was doing it. Not all spectators are invited on top of the dugout, and not all spectators have an opportunity to make contact in that nature with the mascot on top of the dugout. So it's a unique situation that not many spectators are put in and is not inherent to spectating baseball. In addition, even if the risk is inherent to spectating baseball, the team failed to maintain the top of the dugout in a reasonably safe condition. She was knocked off the side of the dugout. There was no protective, there were no railings, there was no skid resistance on the roof. And so there are many simple steps that the Sky Sox could have taken. Knowing that they allow mascots to dance with spectators on top of the roof, that would have prevented her injuries.
What about Mr. Pippa's argument that putting a railing around the dugout would have?
Well, first, I think Your Honor's point is well taken that there are plenty of protrusions and things around a baseball stadium that don't increase the risk to the game. But should it be considered, should that sort of safety device be considered not reasonable in considering the nature of the sport, there are still other less intrusive safety measures that could have been taken. They could have placed skid resistance on the roof of the dugout. We don't know if she slid before she fell off the dugout, but that may have prevented some of her injury. Or they could have simply requested that the mascot not...
evidence that the top of the dugout
was slippery? Your Honor, Ms. Mason couldn't recall whether it was slippery per se, but she knew that there was no extra traction added to the roof of the dugout. Nothing that would make it... Not that we know of, Your Honor, no. But even something as simple as requesting the mascot not to make contact with spectators while they're on top of the dugout would have prevented this injury and would not have required the intrusive steps of placing a guardrail around the dugout. Not once they're on top of this dugout with no guard railings. Maybe, you know, hug the person and then walk up to the dugout or something of that nature. But when you're on a surface that's elevated with no guard railings, it is inherently dangerous for there to be any unexpected movements from one person to the other that could throw someone off balance. And so simply requesting the mascot not to do that would have alleviated this risk.
I'm having a little bit of difficulty with your argument. It's somewhat similar, but different, but I think it's specifically that I'm worried about lines here. So you seem to be saying that, well, parts of the mascot are inherent to the game, but parts
right, Your Honor. And I think looking at the cases in the California court will provide some guidance. In the case of Harding, which my co-counsel brought up, the court said that it is perfectly reasonable for a spectator at one of these games to expect to observe the mascots during the normal course of the game. However, in the Lowe case that we've already referred to, it was the actual contact with the mascot that created the unreasonable. Lowe's the California case, and in the Lowe case, the spectator was observing the game, watching the game while it was being played, and kept getting a tap on the shoulder. So he turned away from the game to find out what was happening on the shoulder, and it was the mascot's tail that was tapping him at that time. And so by the mascot having an unconsented contact with him, he was forced to divert his attention from the game, and that increased the risk to him.
Let's go back to unconsented.
Mm-hmm. Well, again, Your Honor, she had never seen the mascot hit bump anyone on top of the dugout before, and she hadn't received any warning that he was likely to do so during this game. So this hit bump was not one of the activities that she expected to encounter when dancing on top of the mascot with the dugout. She expected to dance and not have any contact with the mascot because that was his usual practice. Again, in the Harding case, then, where the court, this is a case out of Ohio, and in this case, this is the chicken case where the chicken was dancing around. And in that case, the spectator was only observing the mascot from a distance. And the court in that case ruled that when the mascot is being observed from a distance, it is not such a forceful distraction that it's requiring the person to take his or her attention away from the game. The person rather can choose to take his or her attention away from the game. Well, Your Honor, the statute itself doesn't contain anything that would that states that it's linked to the coming of a professional Major League Baseball team to Colorado. And so on that point, all I can see is that it's pure speculation. It could just be a coincidence in timing. There are many other factors that could have played into that decision. But even if that is the case and that they were doing this to limit the liability of stadium owners, they added the three exceptions, which include failure to post warning signs, a failure to maintain the condition in a reasonably safe, the stadium in a reasonably safe condition, and intentional injury. So therefore, even though they intended to limit the stadium owner's liability for these risks that everyone sort of expects to encounter, they wanted to maintain a reasonable standard that spectators could still know that they would go to a game and be safe. This doesn't give the team owners a blank license to do anything they want in the stadium and be immune from suit. And that is also similar to the statute in the Ski case, where they talked about this. The goal was to allow ski operators to maintain ski slopes and keep ticket prices reasonable and things, but at the same time, they are certain dangers that are not inherent that the stadium owners cannot just have, or the ski slope owners were required to warn against or in some way protect their people from. They weren't just having a free license.
What about motions to dismiss? How are they
different? I believe that all the cases we have on those were motions for summary judgment, but I believe that it would be obviously taking the facts in the complaint as they're seen, and then determining whether the statute applies. The ski cases were a little bit different in that I believe it was the Gifford case. That was a motion for, I don't think either of them was a motion to dismiss, so I can't answer the question. Sorry, Your Honor. Your Honor, the ski cases, one was a remand after a jury trial where the jury had concluded specifically that the area was an inherent risk, and so that had been allowed to go to trial. And the other, was a motion for summary judgment, and in that case they said that it was a question of fact for the jury. Whether the risk associated with the game, or whether the risk encountered was one that was inherent to the sport. It is sometimes, Your Honor. Inherent risk in that case was for a jury because it was directly adjacent to the ski slope, so it was for a jury to determine whether it was adjacent to so that it was inherent or whether it was sort of far enough away that it was not going to be inherent. There was a question of fact as to the exact location of the ravine that the plaintiff fell into. But in the Gifford case, the court ruled as a matter of law that when the ravine was in the path, in the ski path, that it was an inherent risk. And in this case, I think that the court should, at a minimum, find that it's a matter of fact whether it's reasonable for a spectator to encounter this risk when spectating a baseball game. As co-counsel pointed out, opposing counsel pointed out, he's gone to 40-some baseball games and never come close to a foul ball. However, one of the most recent games I was at, one of the people I was attending with got hit by a foul ball. So that personal anecdotes aren't very helpful, and this would really be a matter that should be brought for the jury and allow the jury to determine whether the risk is inherent to the game. If Your Honor has no further questions, I will cede the floor. And we just request that you deny the motion and allow this case to go forward.
Your Honor, I think the first point to make is that the notion that inherent risk under the statute has to be something that is integral to the playing of the game is absolutely undermined by the language of the statute, which includes pregame activities. Ms. McBurney discussed the Harding and Lowe decisions, but those both deal with something that is entirely different from what we have. They reach different decisions, but they were both dealing with the general notion of assumption of the risk at a baseball game. And there's a balancing between the people's safety, and they can request seats behind the screen. And if they're not behind the screen, then they're out in the area where they might be struck by a foul ball. And the question of what happens when someone is distracted or not paying attention comes into play. But in our case, it really doesn't. In our case, the legislature has set forth the standard. And it has said that if it is an inherent part of observing a professional baseball game, then the assumption is presumed and there can be no liability. Because the legislature set up the statute to protect professional baseball organizations from the costs of litigation in addition to the cost of paying judgments. And if this case goes through discovery and trial, both sides will expend a great deal of time and effort and money. And the statute was there to create immunity so that those kinds of things, those expenses would not be raised absent a very clear reason to think that one of the exceptions to the statute applies. And here, none of them do. Absolutely not. I think they would invite a great deal more personal injury and liability and put the very lifeblood of the team, the players, at risk. And well, no, I think if a line drive comes in and bounces down, it'll be in the dugout. And I think that is all the reactions we normally have wouldn't help. We'd avoid the incoming and then be struck by the outgoing. And perhaps baseball and I think the one last point I close on, Your Honor, I think you hit on it. It is that in this instance, this young man saw that there was no railing and chose to dance. And to say there should always be railings around places where people can dance would ruin an awful lot of rock concerts for a lot of us. Because people on the stage are dancing and they don't have railings.
Have you been to 40 of those?
No, ma'am. with that, Your Honor, we'd request that the motion be granted.
All rise. We're going to have a deliberation for 5 minutes while you see a little film, and
then the judge will come back in. So.